Welcome to the KHSU Magazine. I'm Natalia Estrada, and I'm here with the North Coast Journal's Linda Stansberry and Jennifer Fumiko Cahill. Nice to see you.
Hi, nice to see you.
Thanks for having us.
What do we have in store for the Journal this week?
Well, we should probably start by talking about Linda's cover story, which is one of those great behind-the-scenes story. Everybody's really familiar with the Sequoia Park Zoo, and it's a beloved institution, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And this week, Linda is taking an unusual angle on that.
Yeah, I wanted to share that actually this idea came from our editor, Thaddeus Greenson, who suggested doing a CPRA, that's a California Public Records Act request, to the Sequoia Park Zoo because it's a city entity. Mm-hmm. So it's subject to public disclosure of all its documents. And we did a CPRA for all of the necropsy reports for animals in the last 10 years. So a necropsy report is basically an animal autopsy. And just in the office, we've been calling it CSI Sequoia Park, but that's not the title we actually ended up with. So what I found was, rather than a lot of animal murder mysteries, which is what we thought we were going to find, was basically behind the scenes in a exotic animal rest home was how it turned out. Most of the animals that whose necropsies I looked at died of old age and all at kind of advanced old age. Talking with Gretchen Ziegler, the zoo director, you know, how she explained it is to me is when the zoo takes on an animal, they take it for their entire life. So that means caring for them mm-hmm. from the time they're little babies until the time that they're very old. And so whenever an animal passes, whether it's, you know, what they're elderly or if it's untimely, they always investigate that to make sure that we're not talking about disease or some issues of care.
One of the main ones was the birds, right? That was one of the main worries because birds do happen to spend a lot more time around humans and they can transfer different diseases.
That's true. Well, particularly the chickens. The zoo barnyard has chickens. And so when I first looked at these autopsies, I was trying to figure out, why do we have so many chicken autopsies? So pretty much every time a chicken dies at the Sequoia Park Zoo barnyard, they send it down to Davis to get a mm-hmm. necropsy and run like heavy metals test on it. And that has a lot to do with the fact that chickens are kind of disease vectors. And these particular chickens have a lot of contact with the public. So if there's an outbreak of Marek's disease or, heaven forbid, like avian flu, they want to get to the bottom of that right away.
Well, you said that a lot of the animals died of old age. Mm-hmm. There were other animals that died consecutively, right? Like one after the other. I think it was the spider monkeys.
Oh, right. This is really interesting and really sad. I would be inclined to say they also died of old age in a sense. A couple of them after their deaths, they were given necropsies and mm-hmm. found to have problems with cancer. They all lived to be in their late 30s, early 40s, mm-hmm. which is pretty remarkable for their species. They only live until like their late 20s in the wild. So in captivity, they live longer. And but the sad thing about these the species, the spider monkeys, they tend to be, you know, fairly cooperative. They live together in bands. And so Gretchen Ziegler, the zoo director, was telling me a little bit about how after three of them passed away, the remaining two monkeys were very sad, like they really felt mm-hmm. the loss of this. So just backing up a little bit, a lot of species are acquired in groups of around the same age. They might be litter mates, and that's why you see these, like, kind of death cycles, death seasons where animals die off around the same time.
They're also very social, right? And so mm-hmm. depression can also set into animals. I know a lot of people don't understand that depression is not just us. Other animals can be depressed. It happens mm-hmm. in canines. I would imagine it happens in primates as well. But that could really take a toll is what I'm getting from this article.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the things that Gretchen Ziegler was talking about was that when one of the spider monkeys passed away, they let the body stay there for a while so their monkeys could figure out that they were dead and, like, you know, actually process it instead of just taking it away and having them be distraught about it. They let them go through the mourning process, which is really kind of touching.
There's allegations, though, that said that the spider monkeys kind of may have had a difficult time in their habitat. talking about equatorial temperature and that the inadequate space heaters weren't enough to contain them. Is that something she expanded upon?
It wasn't a lot of allegations. It was one allegation, mm-hmm. and that was someone filing a complaint saying that the spider monkeys didn't have adequate nighttime temperatures, and it contributed to the death of one of the males, Junior. Mm-hmm. And in that case, they found Junior's necropsy revealed that he had leukemia, and that was the cause of his death. It didn't have anything to do with nighttime temperatures. Mm-hmm. Although they acknowledged they had had some problems maintaining temperatures, they were using space heaters at times to keep the enclosures heated. However, they said that the Animal Welfare Committee concluded that they were keeping the enclosures well above national standards. Okay. For this species.
Okay. So as far as the investigation goes, what is the overall feel of this article, what you discovered as far as the necropsies and the different things about investigating animal deaths at the zoo? Did you find what you were looking for, or did you find something completely different?
I didn't know what I was looking for. I didn't think that I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't have any reason to believe that the zoo was doing anything wrong, and it sure doesn't appear that they are. You know, it was ended up being kind of like a lighthearted look into the behind-the-scenes things at the zoo, and I just found it generally very fascinating because I'm a huge nerd.
It also kind of looks like it's this little like a memory thing for these animals, just kind of like little eulogies written down, and I think that also might just be how it panned out, and I think that also might be just worth reading in general.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun writing it, although there was a lot of material to go through, and I'm not a scientist, nor am I an expert on animal husbandry, so there's a lot of jargon to go through, and I'm really grateful that I got some expert insight from Gretchen Ziegler on this stuff.
Jennifer, you said that there is something interesting going on in the journal.
We have a Seriously column this week, which is a satirical piece, and which is my piece this week. And I wouldn't call it lighthearted, but it's about something that's been in the news of late. I don't know if you've talked about it on KHSU yet, but incel is shorthand, and it's a self-proclaimed group of involuntarily celibate men, and whose chief complaint is, on the surface, being denied sex by women. So these are straight cis men, typically, and online with a really violent misogynist ideology. And the Southern Poverty Law Center actually tracks them as a hate group. In 2014, one of them, whose name I don't feel like sharing, shot up a street in Goleta, California, close to UC Santa Barbara.
I remember that.
He had a horrendous manifesto about the sort of stating the incel stated plight of being denied sex and the awfulness of women and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I know. Cry all the tears. And then most recently, last month in Toronto, Canada, a self-proclaimed incel declared on Facebook his intentions and then rammed a van into a crowd and killed 10 people. In response, a number of people, including someone that I can't believe draws a paycheck from the New York Times, suggested a remedy to the plight of incels as if it's a distribution of resources issue.
Women are resources?
Yes, or at least sex as a resource.
Okay.
And that he suggested sex robots. And sex robots, come on, sex robots have been a topic of conversation and mostly internet mocking, but they've been on my mind. The sex robots have been on my mind.
They're actually really developed. I mean, I see this on, Gizmodo all the time. They're like,
yes,
have real facial expressions. And I'm like, well, that's that's going down the internet mind. But I can definitely, I don't understand why someone would suggest that when this is a real situation happening.
Right.
But
so it's really, I think, indicative of the way that people will do all kinds of mental gymnastics to avoid looking at hate groups as hate groups. Looking, you know, we talk about alt-right and white nationalists as if they're not racists. We talk about them like they have a political ideology, and we try and, like, skirt away. I say we. There are people who try and skirt away from the base issue, which is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, I think people are doing all kinds of bending over backwards to talk about incels like it's about sex. Like, it's about our sexual mores or about who gets to be called attractive and who isn't. And really, at the base of their ideology, and it is an ideology, is hatred of women and a denigration of women.
I think it's about power.
It really is.
Like a loss of power in a certain aspect that might have been within their power, within their grasp.
Right.
And suddenly it might be slightly equalizing out. And I say equalizing in bunny quotes because equalizing.
Yeah.
And that might be something people don't like.
Well, you know, interestingly, this idea of the sex robots meshes with the incel issue in that the sex robot industry, when you watch, you know, videos, promotional videos and things like that, they're talking about how the robots are becoming more and more like real women and how great that is. But the more you have an inanimate object that does everything that you want it to, the less it is like a real woman. They don't really want robots that are like real women. They want women that are like robots. And so the piece that I've written is a pitch from a robot company that provides a more realistic, a hyper-realistic experience of human sexuality that includes all the awkward, unpleasant things about sex, including awkward first conversations, having to talk about safe sex, somebody maybe not calling you back.
Ghosting.
A robot that, occasionally might say things like, ow, 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 you're on my hair, or other embarrassing, awkward moments of sex, because sex is more than just, you know, porno-style pleasure, right? It's more than a stylized fantasy. It is also really complicated and changes over time, just like a relationship changes. And so it's kind of going through all the potential awkward moments and maybe not great moments of sex. Like, if you really want this, if you really want in on human sexuality, then you also have to accept these things. You have to accept that maybe your partner is, like, thinking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, that might be a thing.
I mean, at the same time, I can see a lot of people seeing as this is the only solution because they feel hopeless. And that's based upon a lot of different things, like the patriarchy telling them this is how life is supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's not going your way. I can see a lot of people agreeing with this, which is kind of scary.
The solution might be, you know, men teaching other men to respect women. That might be a thing.
That might be a thing.
That could be a thing that we could do. But instead, why don't we, like, work on AI and make robots that can blink? Because that's always worked out historically. If you watch, you know, any sci-fi series, like, watch some Westworld. Rent a Ridley Scott movie.
Stargate. Isn't there a robot in that?
I believe everything has a robot. And it always, Data's the only one that's ever worked out. And it's because he's not hot.
Jennifer's not going to toot her own horn, so I just wanted to throw this in there, that she won several California Better Newspaper Awards this year for her Seriously columns. She's very funny, and because she has received so much hate mail from people who don't appreciate her sense of humor and instead want to argue basically the yes, pro-sex robot point of view on a number of different issues,
mm-hmm.
I think everyone should get out there, read her back catalog, and appreciate her.
I am going to buy you that muffin after this anyway. You didn't have to say that. You were going to get the muffin.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your time and look forward to looking through the journal this week.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.